Welcome back to the Deep Dive. Today, our mission is to get into what genuine fundamental transformation actually looks like.
Yeah, we're really trying to cut through all the noise of the 30-day challenge, the whole optimization mindset.
Exactly. We're going to be looking at some ancient methods that are built not just on simple willpower, but on this idea of a systemic, almost empirically tested internal technology.
A technology designed to completely rewire your nervous system.
And we've got a fascinating stack of sources for this one.
We really do. We're combining academic scholarship on ritual anthropology, some cutting-edge papers on things like vagal tone training and dopamine receptor dynamics.
And maybe the most important piece, we have a firsthand account of a modern practitioner's journey through this whole process.
Right. We're really investigating the science of surrender.
And as is our tradition here, we always start with something overheard. I was grabbing coffee the other day, and I caught just a snippet of this conversation that, honestly, it sets the stage perfectly.
Oh, I love when that happens.
Yeah. So this woman, we'll just call her Sarah, was talking about the rigor of this practice she was in the middle of.
Okay.
She was talking about her daily cold showers, and she said something that just stopped me. She said, "The cold water, I can't predict that. My nervous system can't fake it."
Wow.
And then she contrasted that with what she called predicting myself, which was basically her term for being locked inside the familiar, comfortable patterns of her life.
That phrase, predicting myself, that is the absolute key.
Yeah.
That's it. That's the whole thing we need to unpack.
Right.
I mean, the central failure of most self-improvement efforts is that they let the nervous system stay in its lane. It maintains its existing structure, its dependencies.
It keeps predicting itself.
Exactly. And these ancient systems, like the one Sarah's doing, they're specifically designed to just eliminate the nervous system's ability to run on autopilot. They force it into a state of acute present moment adaptation.
Which is exactly what she's undertaking. The practice is called the Vrata, specifically the Sabaramala Mandala Kalam Vrata.
And it is a rigorous, and you have to underline that word, a rigorous 41-day purification practice from Hindu and Jain traditions.
And when we say rigorous, we're talking about highly specific total system restrictions, diet, sleep, cold water immersion, and even prescribed ways of speaking.
And here's why you should care. The whole thing culminates in a really demanding physical ordeal, a long, challenging pilgrimage.
So our mission today is to take this holistic ancient practice and just put it under a modern scientific microscope.
Yeah, we want to investigate what the academic sources, what neuroscience tells us about the precision of these rules. Why 41 days? Why not 30?
And critically, what does this kind of systemic technology offer you that the fragmented sort of biohacking attempts at optimization so often miss?
That's the big question.
Okay, let's get into it. Let's unpack this. We need to define Vrata beyond just, you know, discipline. Yeah. What's the fundamental difference between this and, say, a 75 hard challenge?
Well, to really grasp the depth here, you have to look at the Sanskrit root, one Vranatari. It means to choose, to vow, to resolve. But the crucial part is that its meaning is inextricably linked to another word, Herta. And Urda translates roughly as cosmic order or truth or the natural flow of the universe.
So it's not just a personal thing.
Not at all. Vrata isn't merely a personal act of discipline. It's an alignment. You are making a personal vow to harmonize yourself, your whole internal landscape, with a larger predetermined ordered structure.
Wow. So the practice itself is designed to connect the individual human system back to the macrocosm.
Precisely.
That separation between Vrata and a New Year's resolution is, it's profound.
It's everything. Think about a standard resolution. It's aspirational. It's, I want to be healthier, or I will stop doom scrolling.
It's all about the ego's desire to improve its own performance.
Exactly. It's ego-driven.
Mm-hmm.
Vrata, on the other hand, is preparatory. Mm-hmm. The declaration is totally different. It's, I am preparing this vessel, this body, this nervous system to receive or achieve something that it cannot receive in its current state.
Its current, you know, distracted or impure state.
Yeah.
So the goal isn't just completing the discipline. The goal is the capacity that the discipline creates by changing your fundamental operating system.
Yes.
It's about becoming worthy of the transformation, not just hitting a metric.
You've got it. In this specific tradition, you're preparing for sadhana spiritual practice, or to meet a deity, Lord Ayyappa. But the sources we looked at are explicit that this is not just a metaphor.
It's physiological.
It is measurable and physiological. You are intentionally downregulating the nervous system so it can handle a completely different, maybe even a higher reality.
And this brings us right back to this idea of Radha as an internal technology. I love that framing. We always think of technology as external, you know, the app, the device.
But Radha provides this detailed, sophisticated set of instructions for reprogramming your own system. It leverages controlled stress. And this is the key, radical precision.
It's not an abstract request to just be more disciplined.
Oh, no, not at all. It's specific. It is.
Yeah.
Eliminate these exact foods. Bathe at these exact times. Modify your speech in these exact ways.
The instructions are the technology.
They are. If you follow the instructions, the output, the transformed nervous system, is predictable.
And this emphasis on precision, it just perfectly highlights the fatal flaw in modern extraction.
The biohacking tendency.
Yeah, that tendency to just pick and choose the parts that feel good. Like, oh, I'll do the cold plunges because they feel stimulating, but I'll skip the dietary stuff and the social restrictions.
And that is the fundamental danger of pulling these systems out of their context. The sources all emphasize synergy. The restrictions are designed to remove all the nervous system's buffers at the same time.
All at once.
So if you only do the cold plunge, but you keep your caffeine and sugar intake, the caffeine or the sugar will act as an emergency buffer. It will absorb the very stress you're trying to use for adaptation.
So you're removing an essential, maybe unseen mechanism. You're removing the friction.
The friction that the whole system relies on to create change.
Yes. That's a really key distinction. The synergy means the discomfort of, say, rule A is amplified by the absence created by rule B and C.
It all works together.
So let's walk everyone through those rules. Let's investigate the hard physiological reasoning behind each one of them.
We have to start with the most demanding one, rule A somatic discipline through cold exposure.
Okay.
The mandate is a twice daily cold bath, and the forces are really clear on this. It's not a quick lukewarm rinse.
Right. It requires full immersion, or at least pouring water over your head.
And it's timed precisely at dawn, the Brahma Muhurta, between 4:04 and 6:00 a.m., and then again at dusk.
Timing alone is brutal. I mean, it forces a confrontation with your circadian rhythm twice a day. But the cold water mechanism itself is incredibly fast and precise.
It's immediate. Cold water exposure, especially on the face and neck, triggers the mammalian diving reflex. This is an ancient involuntary survival mechanism.
And what happens?
Your heart rate just drops instantaneously. It's a phenomenon called bradycardia. And that initiates this powerful shift, activating the vagus nerve, which is the main highway for your parasympathetic rest and digest system.
So doing this consistently, twice a day for 41 days, is essentially, it's advanced vagal tone training.
That's exactly what it is. Vagal tone is a quantitative measure of your nervous system's ability to recover from stress. High vagal tone is associated with better emotional regulation, resilience, faster recovery.
You're training your internal systems to shift from fight or flight to rest and digest on demand.
You're building elasticity and robustness into your autonomic nervous system. By forcing this extreme shift twice a day, every day, you're dramatically increasing that capacity.
And that's just the resilience training. There's also the immediate neurochemical payoff. It's like a natural controlled high.
It is profound. Cold exposure triggers this acute, massive release of catecholamines. Studies show norepinephrine, which is for focus and vigilance, increases by 250%.
Wow.
Dopamine, the pleasure and motivation chemical, also spikes by 250%.
Yeah.
And importantly, beta endorphins surge by 300%.
So the body is generating its own powerful, natural reward system.
Yes. It's forcing itself to overcome discomfort using internal chemistry rather than relying on the external stimulants that Radha prohibits, like caffeine or sugar.
This is such a perfect example of ancient wisdom just converging with modern neurobiology. Our sources pointed out that recent research is suggesting the vagus nerve function might even be a biomarker for what's called Vata dosha in Ayurveda.
This convergence is genuinely beautiful. In Ayurveda, Vata is the principle that governs movement, which includes the nervous system, your breath, circulation.
Okay.
If Vata gets agitated, often by stress, caffeine, irregular sleep, the nervous system gets dysregulated. It leads to anxiety, exhaustion.
And the Vata practices.
There are systematic interventions designed specifically to regulate Vata, regulating sleep, eliminating stimulants, and training the vagus nerve with cold exposure. The ancient diagnosis that the nervous system is out of balance aligns perfectly with the modern treatment of boosting vagal tone.
Amazing. Okay, let's move to rule B, dietary precision. This is where Sarah, the woman I overheard, said the practice became really inconvenient.
And the inconvenience is completely by design. It forces mindfulness.
So this isn't about simple dieting. It's a strict adherence to what are called sattvic foods, pure, light, harmonious.
Right. And a rigid elimination of rajasic, which are overly stimulating, and tamasic foods, which are heavy and dulling.
And the rules are so specific. They mandate avoiding regular grains like wheat, rice, lentils, beans.
And substituting them with alternative grains like millet, buckwheat, amaranth, tapioca. You just can't rely on processed food or quick dining options. Every single meal requires attention, preparation, and intention.
And the specific prohibitions, I mean, some of them sound bizarre to a modern ear, but they have a clear chemical logic when you look at the sources.
Take the famous one, no onion and garlic.
Right. Why is that?
They're classified as rajasic because they're believed to stimulate sexual energy and aggression.
And from a Western chemical perspective,
it actually holds up. The compounds in these alliums, like allicin and allyl sulfides, are known to cross the blood-brain barrier. They modulate neurotransmitter systems, often affecting compounds linked to drive and excitement, like serotonin or maybe even testosterone pathways.
So whether you call the effect rajasic or neurotransmitter modulation, the outcome is the same, a measurable change in brain chemistry.
Exactly.
Other prohibitions include things like nightshades, fermented or processed foods, only using rock salt, and a restriction to only cow's milk, because buffalo milk is considered tamasic or dulling. It's a total overhaul of your fuel source.
It is. And when we analyze this dietary shift through the lens of Western biological science, three crucial timescales emerge. And this provides the first really solid justification for why the practice has to be so long.
Okay, let's delve deep into those timescales. What's the very first adaptation the body makes?
The first one is the microbiome shift. Yeah. The gut-brain axis is absolutely paramount here.
We hear so much about that now.
And for good reason. Your specific mix of gut bacteria will shift detectably within just a few days, maybe 3 to 7 days, of a major dietary change.
But that's just the initial shift.
Right. For those changes to become stable, to establish a new bacterial profile that can reliably influence your neurochemistry. And remember, your gut bacteria produce up to 90% of your serotonin. That requires a full 4 to 6 weeks.
So the 41-day period of RADA captures that. It establishes a stable, supportive, sattvic microbiome.
Exactly. Then the second time scale is the dopamine system reset. This is the core mechanism that combats modern addiction and our consumption patterns.
The constant need for stimulus.
Precisely. We live in a world of high reward, low effort stimulus. Processed food, sugar, caffeine, social media scrolling. Chronic consumption of these things causes dopamine D2 receptor downregulation.
In simple terms.
You need more and more stimulus just to feel a baseline level of reward. It's a mechanism shared with substance addiction.
And RADA is a complete removal of all of those high spike stimulants.
All of them. There's an initial withdrawal, which is brutal, we should say. But receptor upregulation, the process where your brain starts building and using receptors again, that begins around day 10 to 14.
But it's not done then.
Not even close. Full normalization, where natural rewards like a walk in the sun actually become satisfying again, that requires 4 to 6 weeks. The 41-day duration allows the nervous system's hedonic set point to truly fully reset.
So if you quit something for just 14 days, you've started the process, but you haven't finished the neurological repair. Day 41 ensures that normalization is complete.
You got it. And the third time scale is metabolic adaptation. Changing your primary fuel source takes time.
Right. Moving from a typical high-carb Western diet to these alternative grains and simplified foods.
Your metabolic pathways need to adjust.
Well,
your body requires anywhere from 2 to 4 weeks to complete that substantial macronutrient adaptation, with your metabolic markers really stabilizing between week 4 and week 6.
So again, the 41-day window ensures the body isn't just surviving the new diet, but it's actually thriving and fully adapted to that less stimulating fuel source.
The precision is just stunning when you look at it like that.
It really is. Now let's look at Rule C, sensory and social withdrawal. This seems designed to remove every single external comfort and buffer that the system relies on for escape.
That's the core intent. It's all about conservation of vital energy and the removal of avoidance mechanisms. You have the standard prohibitions.
Mm-hmm.
No alcohol, tobacco, coffee, caffeine, no sex. Celibacy.
Right.
You're also asked not to cut your hair or nails, which is an external mark of surrender to the process. But the subtle rules are maybe even more potent.
Like sleeping on the floor. I mean, that sounds incredibly uncomfortable.
It is designed to be uncomfortable. It forces the practitioner to increase interoception.
Which is your internal awareness of your body's state.
Exactly. Your awareness of your physiological state. When you sleep on a soft mattress, your body just collapses into unconscious comfort.
Yeah.
When you sleep on a hard, unyielding surface, your body is forced to consciously engage and then relax its own tension. It becomes this subtle, nightly training session in mastering discomfort without seeking external help.
And the celibacy rule that ties into the Ayurvedic concept of ojas, how does that connect to modern science?
So ojas is this concept of the body's most refined, deep, vital reserve. It's often associated with immunity, deep energy stores, neuroendocrine health, and it's said to require 30 to 40 days of this disciplined living and diet to build and conserve this vitality.
And the Western parallel?
The Western parallel is the conservation of energy that normally goes toward externalized dopamine chasing and stimulation. By practicing abstinence, that energy is directed inward, toward physical and spiritual resilience. It ensures that deep internal tissue repair, linked to restorative sleep and sustained energy, can take place without being constantly depleted.
And what about the mandate to wear dark clothes, black or dark blue? That's often connected to honoring Saturn or Saniswara.
Right. The black clothing is a public declaration, and it's a symbolic act. In this context, Saturn or Saniswara represents friction, obstacles, and discipline.
Okay, that makes sense.
So by wearing the colors associated with him, the practitioner is symbolically submitting to the difficult reality that transformation must involve struggle. It must involve removing deep-seated obstacles. It reinforces the internal vow with a visual external sign of humility and surrender to the difficult path.
Submission to the system, not fighting against it. I get that. Now, for Rule D, which might be the most potent psychological hack of all, speech modification and accountability.
Oh, this one is brilliant.
You have to say Swami Saranam, which means I surrender to the Lord or I take refuge in the Swami, before and after every single conversation.
This simple repetitive verbal action is just genius because it tackles the nervous system's reactivity head on. First, it functions as an exceptional mindfulness anchor.
Oh.
Well, you cannot thoughtlessly react to a stressful email or a rude comment, or even just a simple request if you are required to pause, vocalize a phrase of surrender, and ground yourself in the present moment before you speak.
It breaks the chain of habitual reactive communication.
Completely. And the very act of vocalization has a physiological component, right?
Absolutely. Intentional vocalization, especially at the beginning and end of social interaction, directly engages the ventral vagal nerve complex,
which is the safe and social branch of the parasympathetic system.
Yes. The conscious use of your voice activates the recurrent laryngeal nerve, which calms the whole social engagement system. By forcing this calm, intentional speech, the practitioner promotes a regulated state, making conflict less likely and social interaction just less stressful overall.
And the final piece of this is the social embedding and accountability.
This is critical, and it's what's so often missing in modern, you know, DIY protocols.
It is. By wearing the black clothes and using that verbal marker, the practitioner is instantly held within a structure of accountability. As Sarah noted, her community, even her modern friends, they started treating her differently.
They avoid conflict. They don't offer her alcohol. They show reverence.
And that external environment reinforces internal behavioral consistency. It makes the discipline far, far easier than if you were just isolated and constantly fighting temptation all alone.
And this is where it gets really, really interesting. We connect the precision of all these rules to the precision of the calendar. Why exactly 41 days? This is where we debunk the popular myths and really confirm the science behind that duration.
Let's start with the traditional rationales. Mythologically, it mirrors the 41 days that Lord Ayyappa spent in penance before his final victory. It's a mirroring of the heroic cycle.
Okay, so that's the story. But the Ayurvedic rationale is purely a calculation of physiological cycles.
Yes. Ayurvedic texts suggest that tamasic foods and the residual effects of stimulants persist in your system for weeks. You need a minimum of 21 days, 3 full weeks, for the body to completely clear those residual effects and for withdrawal symptoms to fully go away.
And then?
Following that, you need additional time, at least 20 more days, to build and then stabilize the new sadific enduring patterns. 41 days is just the summation of the clearing cycle and the establishment cycle.
It provides a full month and a half buffer.
And
this is where we have to address the elephant in the room, the infamous 21-day myth. So many modern self-help books claim you can establish a new habit in 3 weeks.
And our sources confirm that needs to be debunked immediately. The 21-day idea originated in the 1950s with a plastic surgeon, Maxwell Maltz.
Right, I've heard this story.
He observed his patients took about 21 days to psychologically adjust to a new phase, or a new limb. It was an observation of psychological adjustment, not rigorous science on neurological habit formation.
So what does the actual rigorous research say about forming an automatic habit?
Well, studies, like those from Philippa Lally, show that the average time for a behavior to become truly automatic, where you don't even have to think about it, is 66 days.
66, so more than double the myth.
Right, and the range is vast. It can span from 18 days to over 254 days, depending on how complex the habit is. The 41-day window falls perfectly within that period where new neural pathways are becoming established, but crucially, old default pathways are being suppressed and dissolved.
So it's a high-impact, achievable minimum for profound change.
Yes. The genius of Vrata, then, is that the duration is calibrated not to one cycle, but to capture multiple overlapping neurological and biological cycles that all converge right around the 41st or 42nd day.
Let's trace that convergence again for our listener.
Okay, you see the process in three distinct phases.
Yeah.
Weeks 1 and 2 are withdrawal and acute adaptation. You are miserable.
Ah. Yeah.
Dopamine receptor upregulation begins, the initial gut shifts are happening, and you feel the acute stress of the cold exposure and the circadian disruption. Your body is fighting the new instructions.
Then we enter weeks 3 and 4, stabilization.
This is the period of quiet triumph. Metabolic adaptation is complete. Your circadian rhythms are fully re-entrained to that dawn-dusk schedule. The initial simple habits, like the cold bath ritual, they start becoming automatic.
And this is where something critical happens with the myelin sheath.
Right. The development of the myelin sheath begins in earnest.
So for anyone who doesn't know, can you explain why myelin matters for habit formation?
Sure. Think of a neuron like an electrical wire. Myelin is the fatty insulation that coats the wire. The more myelin, the faster and more efficiently the electrical signal travels.
Okay.
When you practice new behavior over and over, you are literally myelinating the neural pathways associated with that behavior, is what makes a behavior effortless and automatic. And that process takes time to ramp up, really starting around week 3 or 4.
Which leads us to the final phase. Weeks 5 and 6, consolidation.
By this phase, the system is fundamentally different. The gut microbiome stabilizes right around day 42. Myelin development peaks, cementing those new behaviors, dopamine receptor normalization completes.
So you are experiencing a new baseline reality.
A new reality where your body is calm, resilient, and no longer dependent on the old external stimulants.
This perfectly explains Sarah's anecdote about the experience of forgetting. She said she woke up around day 15, well into that withdrawal phase, and she realized that the actual sense memory and the physical craving for garlic or her old morning coffee routine were just gone.
That is the technological goal. The process isn't just about adding the new Vrata behaviors. It's about so completely dissolving the old unconscious dependencies, the soft bed, the coffee rush, the reflexive scrolling, that the nervous system literally loses the pathway to those old cravings.
The system has rebooted and the old corrupt files have been wiped.
That's a great way to put it.
And this is not just some arbitrary cultural choice. The consistency across unrelated traditions that use this 40 to 42 day threshold is the strongest evidence that this is an empirical, observed truth.
Yes, the cross-cultural pattern is incredibly compelling. The Islamic tradition has the Arbanin, which is 40 days of mourning and spiritual transformation.
Christian Lent is 40 days of sacrifice.
The Tibetan Bardo describes the 49 days between death and rebirth. These traditions, spanning continents and different theological systems, they all seem to have independently observed that the 6-week mark is a real biological and psychological threshold for profound systemic recalibration.
Okay, so now we have to step back into the modern world. We have cold plunge studios, we have dopamine fasting apps, we have these highly structured programs like 7-5 Hard. We can measure the neurochemical shifts. So if the science is so clear, dopamine upregulation, vagal tone training, why does the systemic context of Vrata matter? Why can't we just extract the individual hacks?
It matters because extraction fundamentally loses the concept of systemic integration and what you could call non-negotiable friction.
Tell us more about that, the no escape hatches approach.
Vrata removes every single buffer at the same time. This is the synergy we were talking about.
Right.
If you were exhausted from sleeping on the floor in the dawn cold bath, you cannot use caffeine to compensate. If you're experiencing chemical withdrawal from sugar and processed food, you cannot use scrolling or social media for a quick external dopamine hit.
You are forced to handle the full, unmitigated discomfort with the internal resilience you are building.
Exactly. The discomfort is not a side effect. The discomfort is the feature that forces the adaptation.
And this leads to a distinction that is so crucial for you, our listener, to understand. Optimization versus transformation.
Optimization, which really drives most modern self-improvement, is typically you versus yourself.
Can I run faster? Can I be more productive? Can I perform better than I did last month?
Exactly. It's rooted in ego and measurable performance metrics. Transformation, as defined by Vrata, is about preparation and humility. The question is, can I change my very structure, my nervous system, to become a vessel that's capable of holding a higher state of awareness or transcendence?
The difference in motivation changes the entire phenomenological result.
It changes everything.
What else is lost when we strip away the tradition?
We lose the social and meaning framework. In the traditional Vrata context, the practitioner is not isolated. They are supported by a community.
Right.
Family adjusts meals. Friends show deference. The practitioner is treated with a certain reverence. This external validation provides powerful, consistent accountability.
Whereas modern practitioners doing a dopamine detox are totally isolated.
They are. And when the practice gets hard, they can quit without anyone knowing or caring, which makes the path of least resistance just too easy to take.
And then there's the purpose, the meaning of the sacrifice itself.
Yes. The restrictions are infused with a transcendent purpose. The practitioner knows why they are uncomfortable. They know they're preparing for that physically demanding 61-kilometer barefoot pilgrimage.
They're preparing to climb the 18 steps, which represent all these psychological and spiritual obstacles.
Exactly. The five senses, the eight emotions, the three gunas, the process of acquiring knowledge.
Wait, we mentioned the gunas quickly before. For a listener who hasn't heard that term, can you just break that down?
Sure. The gunas are the three fundamental qualities of nature. Sattva, which is harmony, purity, balance. Rajas, which is action, passion, stimulation. And tamas, which is inertia, dullness, darkness.
Okay.
The entire Vrata system is designed to eliminate tamas and rajas from your system, leaving you established primarily in sattva. The 18 steps represent overcoming these qualities that bind us to illusion.
So knowing that the discomfort is actually purging the rajas and tamas gives the effort enormous weight and meaning.
It does. So the result of extraction is a neurobiological hack in service of performance, while Vrata is a spiritual technology in service of transcendence.
And the final verification of this difference comes on day 42.
That's the genius of the built-in test. The 61-kilometer barefoot forest pilgrimage is the physiological verification ordeal. If you have cut corners for 41 days, if you sneak a coffee or ate processed foods or skipped a cold bath, your body will expose that fraud on the trail.
You cannot lie to your feet or your lungs when you're facing a 61-kilometer endurance test in the forest.
You can't. The ordeal reveals whether the transformation is an embodied capacity or if it was merely a self-reported discipline. If you extract the 41 days of practice but you skip the ordeal, you have no external, undeniable verification that the change is real and lasting.
Finally, we have to address the critical aspect of individual variation. Most modern DIY protocols are universal, one-size-fits-all. But traditional systems account for individual differences.
And that is a huge loss in modern extraction. Traditional systems rely on elder guidance, someone assessing an individual's prakriti, their unique constitution, and making seasonal adjustments and monitoring symptoms.
Right.
What's beneficial for a highly Veda-dominant person in cold weather might actually be detrimental to a Pitta-dominant person in the summer. This customized wisdom is essential.
Our sources highlighted the responder problem that modern clinical studies always run into.
It's the Achilles heel of universal protocols. In any clinical trial, whether it's for cold exposure or dieting or intermittent fasting, you always have responders who show profound effects and non-responders who show minimal or no change.
And that's often due to genetics or gut bacteria or their existing metabolic state.
Exactly. Universal protocols just ignore this. The elder guidance in Vrata provides a mechanism to customize the duration and intensity of the practice to ensure the individual falls into that responder category.
Mm. This practice, Vrata, it shows us that real, sustainable change is slow, it's profoundly uncomfortable, it requires radical precision, and it demands submission to a holistic system that captures all these multiple overlapping cycles of neurological change. It is, by definition, the anti-shortcut.
It reminds us that consistency, when it's applied over a long enough time scale, coupled with the systemic removal of all the distractions and buffers we rely on, is the only reliable technology for achieving permanent, embodied change.
And we return to Sarah's powerful vulnerability. Her fear, she said, it wasn't the pain of the walking, but the terror of coming back after the 41 days in the pilgrimage and realizing that she was exactly the same person she was before, that she had wasted her effort.
That fear is what drives the depth of the commitment. The ordeal is necessary because it forces the truth. The journey culminates with that great saying, Tatavamasi, thou art that.
The God, the wisdom, the transformation you came looking for outside yourself is inside you. It always was.
And the 41 days of Radha, the radical discipline, the systemic purification, that is, the work that clears the clutter, resets the nervous system, and dissolves the egoic dependencies so that you can actually perceive that truth.
And the truly profound challenge, as we noted, is the one that starts when you get home. Figuring out how to stay different when you return to your comfortable old environment. That may, in fact, be harder than the discipline itself.
Absolutely.
So what does this all mean for you? In a culture obsessed with optimization, shortcuts, and instant apps, maybe the most potent technology we possess is the one that forces us to change everything at once, for long enough that our nervous system literally cannot remember what our old normal felt like. It's not about gaining willpower, it's about gaining capacity.
So for you, the listener, consider this. If you couldn't rely on tracking apps or self-reporting or journaling, if you had to prove your internal change was real and embodied, what physical test or ordeal would verify the truth of your transformation? What is your own verification ordeal? Something to explore.
Thank you for joining us for this deep dive into the 41-day technology of transformation. We appreciate you listening. Close your laptop. Put your phone down. See you over here. We'll talk to you next time.